Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Dr. Stephen Blank joins us. He is a senior fellow for Russia at the American Foreign Policy Council. Has served for many years as an instructor, a professor at the U.S. Army War College, and has authored a staggeringly large number of monographs and scholarly articles and books on his subject matter expertise, namely the former Soviet Union and now Russia. Let me ask you, first of all, let me say, Steve Blank, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome back. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me again.
I'm particularly keen on something that you have really addressed straight on, and I think we're not seeing many others do it quite at the moment, and that is what you call a Russo-Chinese alliance. Talk a little bit about the evidence of these two longtime adversaries coming together, perhaps most especially in opposition to us.
Well, they have not been adversaries since Brezhnev and Mao died. And ever since that period, the relationship has steadily improved. It reduced a lot of tension in East Asia in the 80s and was therefore actually a beneficial thing. But, you know, more recently, the two governments, I believe, present themselves to the world in similar fashions. They have a similar representation of themselves against American power and American values, that is liberalism and democracy. And they are collaborating in world affairs, for example, in the UN and in Central Asia, among others. But most visibly, what has happened now as a result of the sanctions and the really collapsing Russian economy and the isolation of Russia as a result of the Ukraine, Putin has been forced to seek more and more economic and political support from China. And as a result, when you talk about regional security issues in East Asia, whether we're talking about Korea, South China Sea, and even Russo-Japanese relations, I think you see, I'm sure you see that the Russian government is increasingly under pressure to accede to the Chinese line in world politics and to give the Chinese things that they want. For example, a higher class of weapons than was ever sold to them before, and things like that, and opening up Russia for Chinese investment in ways that the Russians would have never done 5, 7, 10 years ago. So to me, this is increasingly an alliance. There's an increasing affinity of ideological, if you like, positions, political positions in UN voting, military collaboration, as we see in the South China Sea exercises, among other things. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Just to drill down for a moment on how this collaboration is translating into very problematic Russian behavior in several areas, if you would talk a bit about the relationship of China and Russia on this so-called nine-dash line position that the Chinese have taken and that has been rejected by the UN Law of the Sea Tribunal.
It wasn't rejected by the UNCLOS. Well, it was rejected by UNCLOS, but more recently it was rejected by the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague. And the Chinese simply said, we don't accept the decision. And the immediate reaction of the Russian government was that, well, we're neutral. You know, this is not our vital issue. We want this to be solved peacefully and all that. But increasingly, immediately after that, you saw Foreign Minister Lavrov and now Putin, a couple of weeks ago, get up and say that we support the idea that this issue be resolved strictly by the countries that live there. In other words, the United States should keep that, which is China's line. And then Putin's got up further and said, we support the Chinese decision to simply ignore the Permanent Court of Arbitration because he made up some grounds that it's not a legal case. So, I mean, this is unprecedented. You've never seen this before.
Very troubling, too. In addition, the Russians are seemingly continuing to aid and abet China's proxy in North Korea as its behavior becomes more and more belligerent. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, Dr. Blank.
Well, Russia really doesn't have any—I would take issue with that. Russia's not really aiding and abetting, because they don't really have any leverage on, although they've tried to get it, on North Korea. But what they are doing is standing with China and basically saying, well, yes, this is a terrible thing. He shouldn't have nuclear weapons. We're opposed to that. But it's your fault. It's the Americans' fault. And U.S., it's your fault. And what's more, you know, by South Korea and you agreeing to build the terminal high altitude anti-missile defense, THAAD, in South Korea, you're contributing to the problem and making North Korea more insecure, which essentially means, well, you have to give them benefits in advance and retreat from oppositions, you know, and that'll get them to stop going nuclear, which is, I think, you know, quite fallacious. But the real power here is China. I mean, the Russians want to play. They're desperate to have a major role in the Korean issue. And Korea has historically been a vital issue for them. But they have no leverage on North Korea. They have very few cards in the game.
Yeah. I thought that they had been providing arms and technology to the North Koreans for quite some time. But
no, that ended a long time ago.
The political support is bad enough, I guess. The Kuril Islands is another place you've pointed to Russian behavior being rather unhelpful at the moment. Talk about that, if you would.
Okay, the Kuril Islands are an island chain north of Japan that were previously Japanese, but were seized by the Russians at the end of World War II. Ever since Japan has regained its full statehood in the 1950s, it has been a major issue in Japanese politics to regain all of these islands, particularly the four major ones. There are about 53 very small ones otherwise. And the Russians have basically stonewalled them on this issue, except for in 1956 when Khrushchev offered two of the islands back, but the Japanese want four. Prime Minister Abe of Japan is personally invested in restoring the relationship with Russia, and he's even offered an 8-point plan of economic assistance and so on, in return for which the Russians would give the islands back to Japan. I'm very skeptical this is going to happen. Putin as much as said it 2 weeks ago in his meetings in the Far East that Russia's not going to give back the territories. What Russia really wants from Japan is that Japan break the sanctions regime and accept that Crimea is part of Russia. I don't see any Japanese government that can do that. And the Chinese will go crazy if Russia and Japan make a rapprochement, and Russia has much more to lose from that.
Let us play this out. It would appear to me that the ultimate upshot of this is that in the end, Russia is building China into a monster that will ultimately consume Russia, Siberia being gone first, but perhaps the rest of it in due course. What do you think Putin is thinking is the ultimate end state of this kind of rapprochement and empowering of the Chinese?
Well, this is a long discussion, but basically Putin is thinking short term because he's trying to find somebody who will support him and put money into Russia in order to sustain his position of power against the United States. And he believes that he can, if he has to alight from the Chinese bus when the time comes. What the Russians would be most afraid of is not so much that China is a monster that's going to devour Siberia, because the Chinese are not all that interested in Siberia. What they're interested in really is Southeast Asia. It seems to be the main thing, and Central Asia.
Listen, let me ask you quickly, Steve, before we're out of time, we're almost there. General Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has recently expressed strong opposition to something that the Obama administration has been trying to get the military to do, and that is share intelligence with the Russians. What do you make of that contretemps and how it's sorting out in Syria in particular?
I happen to agree with Dunford here. I just don't see the point of sharing intelligence with the Russians, given everything that's going on in Syria and the fact that, quite frankly, they're waging an intelligence war against us. And every day you read about whom they've leaked. What is it yesterday? They hacked into Michelle Obama's passport, into White House websites. Apparently, Yahoo was the target of theirs, and 500,000 people's private information now was heisted. What's the point? What is there to gain here?
No upside, lots of downsides. Steve Blank, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you so much for your time today and for the extraordinary contribution you make to our understanding of all these issues with respect to Russia particularly, but also the Russo-Chinese alliance at the American Foreign Policy Council. Come back to us again very soon if you would. Next up, we'll talk with Bill Gertz about those South China Sea exercises and much more. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.